You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I'm Steve Dotto. Glad you tuned us in. Our show's dedicated to helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it in your life. And I'm just back from holiday. Art's just back from holiday. And as I was on holiday, Art, I thought the big news was going to be HP saying that they're getting out of the computer business. They're getting out of WebOS. I was all psyched to do a show on that. And then the news dropped last week about Steve Jobs stepping down, and our show changed a lot.
Yeah, well, I was on vacation also, and my buddy, my road trip friend, he's got the iPad, he's got the Mac Pro, and I was the first one to find out because I checked my Twitter page, and he was like, holy, and jumped onto Huffington Post. Boom, he was just, his eyes were just gigantic circles.
Yeah. Now, the news last week is pretty important in the industry as well, with HP abandoning WebOS, and it's sad for us because we had just done a big review of the HP tablet, and we like WebOS, and all of a sudden it's going away, which just shocked the heck out of me. Less surprising is HP stepping out of the PC business. That's been done before. IBM a few years back decided that the personal computer business wasn't a place to be, and they spun off Lenovo, and both the companies are going along just well. But HP was the leading computer manufacturer in the United States. And for them to step down, and they were profitable. They weren't losing money, which is a key. But man, it must have been hard to make money. You know, here was a statistic that really struck me. HP had to sell 6 computers to make the same profit margin that Apple made off every single computer they sold.
That is amazing.
Isn't that amazing? But that's the race to zero. That's because PCs and the fact that everybody makes them, their margins just kept getting eroded. Apple still has most of their notebooks in around $1,000, and you can get a heck of a good Windows notebook now for $500 or less.
That is true.
So that margin quickly gets eaten up. We've got a great show lined up. We've got a series of my old compatriots, all have worked for Apple in the past in various roles. We're going to get them in to talk about Steve Jobs' legacy, their personal experiences at Apple, and how they've reacted to the news. And we're going to spend a lot of time talking about Steve Jobs' legacy. We've also got Mark Saltzman coming onto the show. You recognize
Mark. Movie guy.
The movie guy, yeah. Cineplex Odeon. He's going to come on, and we're going to talk about the tablet world, what's happening in the tablet world, especially with the announcement of HP stepping out of the tablet game. And of course, we have our regular features. We're not going to have a Mac Tech feature because we've got so much going on in the world of Apple. We don't want to alienate everybody in the Apple world. So
it has nothing to do with you and Chris having a beef or anything.
No, Chris and I are good. Okay. We're solid. We'll come back with Mac Tech next week. But so we're going to tell people right now, remember, if you need anything Macintosh related, where do you go? Mac Station. That's the place to go. And their logo is on our website. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with just a terrific show. We are back on DottoTech, and we're going to do something a little bit unique today. I've brought a panel in place, and I'm not going to tell you the last name because these people are still in the industry, and I want them to talk about their personal experiences. All of them worked for Apple at different times, have gone on to good, solid careers in the high-tech industry. So I have Steve, Janie, and Ian here. Thanks for coming on, guys.
You're welcome.
Now, I'm going to give you a brief bio of these folks. Some come from marketing, some come from sales. Now, Janie, you were with Apple from 88 to 92.
That's correct.
And you're our marketing woman.
Well, thank you.
You were in the marketing department. And then you returned for a year, which must have been really interesting, in 2002 to do a marketing role for Matt Leave, right?
That's correct.
So you have some really interesting perspective of Apple before and then Apple after. Yeah. 10 years split apart. Steve, you only spent 3 years at Apple, but you were with a dealer for many, many years before that as well, right?
Yeah, I spent most of my professional career trying to get to Apple and then spent 2 years there, unfortunately, during the non-Steve years, but...
And they were good years, were they not?
It's very troublesome years for Apple, for sure.
Yeah, that was when Apple was on the slide down. And Ian, you left, you were with Apple from 84 to 93. So you were there just before Steve, and you crossed over some of Janie's time.
That's right. Janie and I met in Hawaii. One of the sales conferences, Janie. I believe we had the typical marketing sales discussion on the beach, I believe.
Okay. That carried on many, many times.
The Apple sales conferences are a bit legendary. Now, Ian and Steve are both in sales side of Apple, which was where so much of the activity happened. So when, I'm going to throw this over for any of you, when you heard the news last week that Steve was stepping down, what was your first reaction?
Well, I think for me is profoundly sad on a human level for, you know, what he means to so many people in the industry, not to mention his own family, but also profoundly sad for this industry. I mean, it's hard to fathom. We won't know for a decade or two the impact of him not leading everybody in this industry to new heights in terms of innovation.
The industry is a more interesting place with Steve Jobs in it. That's the bottom line.
Not even, there's nobody else. I mean, really. Everybody's been chasing him for 30 years.
Yeah, and he created such a beginning. Janie, what were your thoughts?
Well, I mean, Steve is a market maker. I mean, he's created all these markets. And, you know, just to piggyback on what you just said, it's who knows what's going to happen, but it will be probably about 10 years before we'll feel the impact of Steve. You know, but we don't know how long Steve's going to be around and what his impact is, how long he'll be chairman of the board and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And we will talk about the future of Apple in a few minutes. What about you, Ian? What were your thoughts?
There was a sense of corporate mourning that struck me, that came over me. And I know the man is still alive and has a lot more to contribute. So anything I know about Steve, he's got drive and he's tenacious and he'll fight to the bitter end. That's how he lived his business life as well. But there was a certain feel of mourning, Steve. I would have to say that it was sort of like, my gosh, we lived in an era where a man had such vision and amazing drive to see vision through that it was like, it was electric. It was viral. You could sit in one of his conferences and just feel his passion ooze from his mouth when he spoke. So I'm still a little in shock, and I'm on holidays right now calling you, and I still feel a little in shock.
Yeah, I wrote an article, a blog post, where I said, I only met him once, and it was very brief, and it was just a hello, and, you know, almost not even that. It might be me remembering saying hello, and he might have just walked by. But I feel like I grew up with him because my start of the industry was I hitched myself to Apple very early on, and we're of a similar age. And I just feel like even though we've never met, that I grew up with him. So it's like almost like a friend has stepped down in that way. And I know that probably if I'd met him, that we wouldn't have been friends because he wasn't the friendliest of gentlemen. But that I feel the same kind of shock. When you think back on Steve, what are the memories of like that you have of meetings or of speeches that he gave or of anything that really you've carried forward in your career? Ian?
Well, I remember meeting him. I was the youngest salesperson in Apple Canada at the time, and 3 weeks into my employment, I found myself in Hawaii on a beach at one of their traditional annual sales conferences, and it was a formal. We were all dressed in our gear, and there was Mr. Steven Jobs with jeans, a T-shirt, and suspenders on, so I just ran over and introduced myself and said, I'm from Vancouver. I'm very proud to be a part of your company, and I do believe you're changing the world one person at a time. He said, where are you from? I said, Vancouver. He said, oh, that's close to Whistler. Great skiing up there. So I found him very personal. He was non-threatening, very approachable. And I understand working directly for him could have been different in terms of, again, that drive, that need to be the total best that there is. But from afar, as an employee, I found him very approachable.
You are tuned in to Dottotech, and we are taking a walk down memory lane, looking at the resignation of Steve Jobs, the legacy. We have in studio Janie, Steve, and Ian. They are all former employees of Apple who have come in to talk to me about their experiences and their time at Apple. I'm struck by a quote that Steve Jobs, I don't know if any of you have read the book, The Journey of the Reward, which was his first book, which he wrote when he was cast out into the Netherlands.
I've read it.
It was when he had brought John Sculley on to the company, and then he was ousted by Sculley, and that was through most of your years there, Ian, and Steve, you also experienced that. But I was struck when he was at 25 years old, Apple was a company that was still rising, and the board of directors at Apple thought that they needed a more experienced business leader at the helm than Steve. They weren't willing to give Jobs the title of CEO. And so they asked him to find a successor for himself. And he picked John Sculley, who was then the president of PepsiCo. And Sculley refused the job, and Jobs visited him in New York just before Christmas and had a conversation with him. And Sculley was leaning away, not wanting to come to Apple. And here this 25-year-old kid said to the president of Pepsi, and you have to put it in context, he was 25 at the time, and he says to the president of Pepsi, John, you've got a decision to make. Either you're going to come with me and change the world, or you can spend the rest of your life selling sugared water to kids.
Yeah, and you know the real shame of it is John Sculley accepted his offer. He should have kept making sugared water for kids.
And John Sculley admits that.
He came to Apple and made laser printers for the world. Right?
Yes.
Canon inkjet printers with Apple logos on it.
And how did that work out for you, Steve?
Just absolutely brutal.
And Sculley admits it now that he wasn't the right man for the job, that Jobs was the right man. But it probably worked out for the best for the industry because Steve went away. For 10 years, he was gone from Apple. He formed Next, which was a competitive computer company, and then he acquired the graphics division of Silicon Graphics, their software division, and formed Pixar. And so when we think of Jobs, we think of massive success at Apple. Some people think of failure at Next, but he has another big success story in Pixar.
Well, and he took a lot of that from Pixar and from his experience at Next and brought it back to Apple.
Mm-hmm.
So even though he wasn't there for those X number of years, Apple reaped the benefits of what he had done while he wasn't there.
Which is the
kind of guy he is, right?
One thing that I think is very notable is to consider Next a business failure might be true.
Right.
As a technology, I mean, it was remarkable.
It was like Steve's personal lab.
It was absolutely a remarkable computer and a remarkable operating system.
Yeah.
And much of what we see in Macs today, I think, still goes back to those Next days.
So absolutely.
It did give him the ability to sort of reinvent himself, start from scratch, not be accountable to the Apple board and all that kind of stuff. And then obviously he proved some pretty amazing stuff with Pixar and with Next and came back. And that's modern history that we're all pretty aware of.
There's a whole bunch of different layers to the Apple onion, and one of them certainly is the culture of the Mac and the culture of Apple. What started that? Where did that begin? Janie, as a marketing person, is there something that happened or some philosophy that made Apple what it is?
You know, I think that's sort of the million-dollar question, but what I know, my experience at Apple anyways, I worked in Toronto and also worked a lot down in Silicon Valley, and it was just the people. The people who Apple hired to come in were self-starters, get it done. I mean, it didn't matter. I mean, Ian, remember, you'd stay up all night if it had to happen. And going into some of the product labs, which we were not allowed into very often, but if you got to go into them, you'd see people with sleeping bags under their desk, with alligators over their cubes. They were all individuals, yet under this umbrella of changing the world one person at a time. And you really felt that.
You've done a great job of describing the culture, but the challenge is, how did that culture evolve? What created that culture?
I think it's again, it's pure Steve. I mean,
it is pure,
I think it is. I mean, I think they're going to study this for hundreds of years in terms of business, everything that Steve has done. I mean, Steve is, I think, the culture of the individual. He hires brilliant individuals, and he gives them something to believe in. Like, we're going to change the world.
Yep.
Yeah, and you want to get up and go to, you know,
you
want
to go to work
and be a part of that. I mean, you know, the first time I touched an iPod, I mean, it was just magical to me. And I had lots of MP3 players in my life before that, but it was just a magical moment for me. And you knew that just came from his ability to take individuals and get phenomenal work out of them. Just gut-wrenching, life-altering work out of them that turns into things like iPods. And then guys like us got to market and sell it. And I tell you, you're pretty proud, you know, when you get up every day and you were selling a Macintosh, which was revolutionary in his day, or the iPod or whatever. I mean, it's that culture of being something bigger than most of us ever get to be a part of as business people.
And there's two sides to that culture. You described the excitement and the drive. And the rest of the world that competed with Apple saw that quickly turn into a type of a corporate arrogance, which was definitely a part of those years at Apple.
Well, I mean, I can comment because I came from IBM in the early days.
Yeah.
And was managing PC Junior.
Which was a rousing success, the Charlie Chaplin campaign.
Exactly. But you know what? Who else took a product from birth to death in the IBM Corporation? I mean, I learned marketing cold, right?
Yeah.
Product life cycles. And to go from IBM to Apple sort of five blue suits to five pairs of blue jeans was unbelievable.
Yeah, that must have been total culture shock for you.
Well, I don't know. It just seemed like one day I was an IBMer. I'm not a very good IBMer, I was told, because I had Apple II ads on my walls at IBM and was just basically saying, hey, you know. So Apple, even in the Apple II days, I mean, they had a magic. Their marketing was strong. Their positioning was strong. Their colors. Look at the old Apple logo, the eight colors. I mean, Steve did everything right.
Yeah.
From a marketing point of view.
We're going to take a break. We've got Ian, Steve, and Janian with us. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dotto Tech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
We are discussing the legacy that Steve Jobs is leaving behind at Apple as he steps down in an active role with the company. I have three former Apple employees in studio, Janie, Steve, and Ian, who worked at Apple cumulatively between 1984 and 2002. There was years which covers ups and downs at Apple. And when we look at Jobs, a lot of the articles that are being written talk about his focus, his drive, and his attention to detail. And the fact that he seemed to have his hands in every single aspect of at least of a product design, but I suspect that it was from what I hear, he also had his hands in every aspect of marketing, and maybe even finance. I don't know if he delved that far down, but that laser focus, that attention to detail, it's widely credited. That's what makes the products what they are, and how he blends art and technology together. Do you think that when we look at the products, that they reflect the man?
Well, if you look at 84, when the Mac came out, January, the ad at the Super Bowl, we all remember that.
Yep.
In 83, whilst developing the Mac operating system, and when you turned the Mac on and you say, welcome to Macintosh, well, it was taking about 60 seconds to turn on. And Steve, with the lead engineer who was on that development team, said, you need to make this much tighter, much quicker. And the lead engineer, the poor guy who was developing the OS for Mac, said, Steve, I've done everything I can. I've squeezed it as hard as I can. It is what it is. And he turned to the lead engineer. He says, do you realize how many of these things we're going to sell? Do you know how often human beings will turn on their computer? Do you know how many human hours of mankind you're robbing from this planet by telling me you cannot make that a quicker turn on? Get to work and make that happen quicker. And he did, and kept his job.
I think the other thing, and Ian probably has a bit more closely experienced with this stuff, but you think of what he did with the Mac team. He had a beautiful computer company going. He didn't take a team and say, you're part of this Apple computer thing. He took a team away from Apple computer, built an amazing environment for them to work in, you know, with Stradivarius violins and you know, Porsche Carreras for them to walk around and admire, things of beauty. He separated that team from his existing company, and they produced, I mean, a truly, truly remarkable computer.
And that was in the books that I've read, that was the beginning of seeing the personality of Steve Jobs really evolve. Whereas, as you said, the Apple was a successful company. The Apple II was a leading personal computer, but he made an elite team that was building the Mac, treated them differently, treated them better, moved them away from the rest of the company. And it caused a lot of consternation within the Apple campus at the time. Personality, that style of my way or the highway, became more and more relevant or more and more prevalent with Steve as his career moved on.
Well, here's what I've seen in business culture, you know, since then, is that when you're managed, let's say you're the guy who's the head of the Apple II division, you know, he sees the Macintosh. What does he do? He goes, well, that's going to cannibalize my sales. You're not going to sell new computers. You're just going to ruin my sales. So business culture kind of suffocates its own innovation. So
yes,
he separated that brilliantly, and they did produce a remarkably different machine.
Which brings us to the point of how Apple kept all their products secret, always, always, always. Because the Cupertino campus is so huge, and you could be in a separate building, and you have no clue what's going on in another building. You walk around or in another floor, or you come to a door that's closed, you know, you just don't go in it. That's part of the culture. It's part of why innovation happened there. Everybody was so working so hard and so flat out on their own projects that you just you didn't really necessarily wonder what other people were doing. Steve was in charge.
Why have other companies not managed to create the aura that Apple has? Ian?
I think there's something to be said, and there's some brilliant marketeers who are all over this, but people don't buy what you sell. They buy why you sell it. And when Steve Jobs creates products, he puts his heart and soul into the product. And those around, those of us who've had the complete blessing of being able to work with the guy and represent his vision through these wonderful products, know exactly what I'm talking about. It's contagious. And that's what happens. The products are contagious. So everyone who buys one goes on to sell 100. The products are that kind of thing because he's put his heart and soul into the product with that drive and that passion of his. That's my belief, that the stuff's contagious.
You know, I've often had the conversation where people have asked me what I think the magic sauce is for Apple. And I do think, kind of working off what you just said, Ian, that Steve would build products for himself. And if we stop and look at who Steve is, he is the quintessential consumer. He's 56 years old. He's a baby boomer. He comes from a middle-class family. So he's got some money, but he probably didn't have too much money. He builds products that he loves, that he wants, and he has such an eye and such an artistic flair that he's just got really good taste as far as that goes. And consequently, since he's building stuff for himself, it then resonates with the rest of us.
Affordably is a very key element to that, Steve.
Yeah.
That he's not building and pricing them out of the market. He sees he's got the science for mass consumption. He knows if you price it properly, the world will buy it, especially when it's that fantastic of a product.
Well, again, let's harken back to the question, though. Why have other companies not managed to bottle that and figure it out? Because, you know, Apple consistently leads the world in design, and we see little flashes of it here and there. We see, you know, Volkswagen come up with a new design Mini a new design Bug that looks a lot like the iMac, so it was suddenly cool for a little while. But everybody else still seems to be playing catch-up after all these years.
Why?
I was just going to say, just no guts, no bravado. And Steve was in charge.
Ego.
I suppose you could say ego.
Yeah.
But it was never management by committee at Apple.
No.
Management by committee just leads to weak product development, weak marketing strategies, weak everything.
There are a lot of business leaders that can lead through efficiency, right? You look at Michael Dell. Brilliant in the sense that he's created a hyper-efficient model to deliver what I consider to be inferior products, but very efficiently. Innovating is very, very, very hard, and very, very few people have proven they can do it. And so it's just easier to build an efficient model than it is to build an innovative model. And Steve is all about innovation, whether it was at Pixar, his time with Disney, you know, what he did with Pixar, he gave storytellers the ability to tell stories. I mean, he didn't stifle them to efficiency. He motivated them to inspire and innovate. And he did that with Apple as well.
You are tuned in to Dottotech, and we are taking a walk down memory lane, looking at the resignation of Steve Jobs, the legacy. We have in studio Janie, Steve, and Ian. They are all former employees of Apple who have come in to talk to me about their experiences and their time at Apple. So let's boil it down to two final questions. One is Steve's legacy, and you can take that however you want. Janie?
Wow. Legacy. Well, right now we have a living, breathing, amazing company with products that have changed the world. And I really believe that with the new management team who have been working with Steve for so long, that Steve, there's a product plan for the next 3, 5 or so years, I would say. And in terms of Steve leaving, hopefully he'll still have his finger on the button as long as possible. And I just really believe that legacy, I don't know, that's such a final word.
Mm-hmm.
I just think Apple will carry on, because if we believe that Steve instilled in all of us who were employees, that the same kind of people are still there, it will carry on. The same brilliance will carry on. And Tim Cook, I mean, he's been managing and been at the helm for quite a while now. Obviously, Steve turned it over to him. There's got to be huge confidence there.
Okay.
And so,
Steve, I'll ask you next. I'm going to let Ian have the last on this.
I think for me, you know, Steve will be, his business career will, you know, he'd be compared to people like Thomas Edison. I mean, he's not, I don't consider Jobs to be an inventor, but he fostered invention. So I think he'll go down in those kind of books, right? With a Thomas Edison, probably the greatest American innovator / inventor, whatever you want to call him, of his time for sure. Yeah. And so I think his legacy, I think Apple's glide path is very long. They're going to have a 3-4-5 year run that's going to be amazing because, you know, they've got good stuff. But I'm worried about Apple past that glide path 4 or 5 years for sure, because Steve is just so original and so unique.
Yeah, it's interesting you say Edison. I compare him to Henry Ford more.
You and I had this discussion the other day. I'm right. There's so much about Henry Ford that I don't like that I could never compare Steve Jobs
to
Henry Ford.
There's a lot about Steve Jobs not to like, too.
That's the whole, remember the whole Think Different campaign that Apple did.
Yeah.
Where everybody was compared to the crazy ones. The misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers.
Yeah.
You know, that was the whole campaign. And Steve Jobs definitely is one of those people.
Well, here's what I love about that marketing program. His team tried to convince him it was grammatically incorrect and they shouldn't use it.
Exactly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Think different, because think differently is English, is proper English.
Oh, and he just wanted to think differently.
Think different.
He would have looked at the typography because he was the consummate artist. Ian, final word.
Steve Jobs, legacy of Apple, couple things come to mind. Never follow and never compromise. Steve does not do sequels. Steve invents and creates a brand new path. And the greatest compliment is when everyone copies it. It's happened so many times in Apple's history. Apple will continue to be copied. I think primarily because of Steve's, what he stands for. People follow people who really stand for something. And great people follow that kind of people. And a lot of great people are still at Apple today. His vision will leave on. He's still active. In terms of his succession planning, I'm sure this has been well thought out, well architected, like every product that Apple's ever brought to market, is who's going to look after the company after Steve has to hang up his skates. So I don't see a problem with Apple leadership. If we were concerned about that, it would have already crashed and burned under Scully's leadership. And unfortunately for Scully, that didn't. I mean, the company is doing wonderfully well. It's probably the most powerful, most economically viable organization. Do you realize the economy is in a very, very bad place, and Apple's stock value? It's amazing. What would their company be like if the last 3 or 4 years we were in a healthy economy? That to me defies gravity, corporate gravity, in terms of what Apple's vision's about. And it's because of Steve and his drive, his passion. It's contagious. We've got it. All of us have it, and including the people that use the products. That's the secret sauce. It's not the employees. It's the vision and the passion is in the product, and those of us who use it always will.
Right.
And
I was just going to say, in closing, the Think Different campaign, the very last line was, because the ones who are crazy enough to think that they can change the world are the ones who do.
Mm. Yes. Ooh.
I know.
Goosebumps,
Janie. Yeah.
And I'll wrap things up. First, I want to first of all thank you guys all for spending some time walking down memory lane with me. When Steve made his announcement, I called a friend of mine on a personal level who is a senior executive at Apple, and I asked her if there was any quotes that she'd heard because she's dealt a lot with Steve in meetings, and because he's known for his mantras, for his sayings. He looks for slogans. And if there were any that really resonated with her, and she says over and over again that he would say to his senior management team that he's as proud of what Apple doesn't do as what they do. Mm. And that speaks to how differently he looked at the world. Thank you all very much. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech. Boy, the other news that I heard while I was away on holiday was how the markets got thrashed. The stock market and people just losing fortunes left, right, and center. And I was thinking of all the money that I saved by not having a massive stock portfolio. I'm just in great shape, Art. And speaking of finances, what is the biggest investment that most people make in their entire life?
Every Friday night beer.
That's you, Art. Most people buy a house.
Oh.
And if you buy a house, what you want is you want a good mortgage. How do you get a good mortgage? You don't go to the bank and ask the bank for a mortgage. They aren't going to give you a good mortgage. They see a sucker walking in the door. Instead, you want to go to Billy Mack, BillyMack.com. Bill Macklem, he's my mortgage guy. He's gotten me great mortgages every time I've bought a house. You want a mortgage broker. That's the way to do it. BillyMack.com.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me online now from his home in Toronto is Mark Saltzman. Viewers or listeners will recognize Mark's name, certainly if they go to movies. He's the tech guy that leads in before all the movies, showing us all the cool tech gadgets, and he writes for a variety of publications. And we go back farther than we care to remember, don't we, Mark?
That's true, Steve. Pleasure chatting with you. Yeah, we certainly, at least 10 years, if not more.
It's more. It's actually more. I was figuring it out. I think you were 12 when we started.
Yeah, right.
So, Mark, I think we got to start off by the news that certainly preoccupied me this past week is the Steve Jobs resignation. What were your thoughts when you first heard that news?
Well, I can't say I was surprised. I was saddened by the news, but I was hardly surprised. If, you know, having attended a number of Apple events in person, you can see how thin and frail he is, and it's no secret he's been struggling with health issues over the past 6-7 years. He, you know, took a leave again earlier in 2011. So, you know, it's sad. And if this photo that has popped up online is true, if it's really not a doctored photo, you know, it's really sad. It does not look good for Mr. Jobs. So
yeah, the latest I read on that photograph, which was stark, is that it's photoshopped. It's a composite, and it's probably not the real thing.
I hope that's the case.
I believe that's the case. But, I believe that it's pretty well documented now that it is a bit of a hoax. Yeah.
Well.
So, but it was. I looked at it, and that photo actually saddened me an awful lot. You know, when I heard that Steve was stepping down, you know, certainly the man and the father and the friend of many people. You know, there's the story around his life that we have to concern ourselves with and should be concerned with. But what do you think about the future of Apple in this? Do you think that Steve is really still the engine that drives Apple ahead, and that they'll have trouble maintaining momentum?
Well, there are many other people at Apple who are instrumental in creating the products, and Tim Cook, Steve Jobs' successor, certainly seems capable. He's been in the industry for a while, been at Apple for, 13 years?
Mm-hmm.
There's his whole design crew and team.
And they've been very stable for a long time.
Anything that comes out over the next 2 years, Steve Jobs has already overseen and approved, and then it's just a matter of execution,
mm-hmm.
you know, manufacturing and distribution and licensing and all that. So, I mean, in the short term, hopefully nothing will happen because, again, a lot of the wheels have been in motion. And Steve, you know, God willing, is still going to be part of the company as chairman of the board, if not CEO. So, you know, in the short term, I hope Apple continues their climb. It's great to see this meteoric underdog story, you know, where 10 years ago, or a little more than 10 years ago, they were on the brink of bankruptcy. They took hundreds of millions of dollars from Microsoft, and now look at them on top of the world. So I hope it continues for their sake. They're, a company that has such innovation. They know how to successfully fuse art with technology, something Steve also did with Pixar. Let's, you know, remind your listeners that this fusion between technology and artistry, and Apple's no exception, and I hope it continues. So let's stay positive. I'm a half glass full kind of guy, so I think things will remain status quo in the short term, and then I'm sure Apple has the resources to hire the best of the best to make sure this isn't a cyclical, you know, thing where it's good they're going to go back in the dumps again.
What do you think Jobs' legacy is going to be now that when we think about the fact that he's stepping out of active life now? So when we look back in 10 or 15 years, what will that legacy be?
Well, without question, he's an iconic CEO in the history books. He'll be seen as, a pioneer of the late 20th, early 21st century. He ushered in many successful products not to, including, of course, the iconic Apple iPod, the iPhone, the iPad, and brought back Macs from near extinction, let's say, with what, 2% market share in the late 90s, if that. You would know, Steve. You're a Mac. You've been a follower.
I've been a little more of a Mac guy than you have through my career. I'll admit that.
That's certainly true. And now look at their market share and their momentum. Really. So I think that he's going to be seen as someone who, again, successfully fused style with technology, made it just as important to use a product and reinvent how you use a product and the interface and the experience than just, you know, sheer speeds and feeds, as we call it, just, you know, gigabyte this and megapixel that. It was more about the experience. So I think he really had a vision that he had a great team to execute on, and I think he'll be considered a pioneer of the digital age.
Yeah, fair enough. Let's chat about some of the other things now. Let's kind of break down and look at some of the hardware that's happening in the marketplace, and lots of news in the tablet front. And you've been spending some time exploring the different tablet options. Are you a fan of tablets?
Yes, I am, and I didn't think I would be, to be honest. I questioned how much I really needed a third screen in my life, somewhere between the cell phone and the laptop. Mm-hmm. But really, until I got my hands, and it was the Apple iPad, the first generation one in early 2010, that really changed it for me. Again, going back to the magic, as Steve Jobs calls it, it's a life-changing experience. I know it sounds really corny and but really when you start flicking and tapping and pinching through all your content and you see how comfortable and intuitive it is, it's hard to go back to, to a mouse and keyboard. Now, even someone who writes articles for a living, I need or prefer still a physical keyboard. I surprise myself how efficient and accurate I am on a virtual keyboard, on a 10-inch screen that is just all flat. And I'm actually quite good. Tablets have just so many advantages over traditional computers. They're thinner and lighter. They're around a pound. They are, of course, mere millimeters thin. You use your fingertips, which is very comfortable. I've often said you can put a tablet in the hands of a 4-year-old or a 104-year-old, and they just get it. Mm-hmm. And it's true. And I've got many anecdotes I can share about little kids and even babies using an iPad. They turn on right away. There's no waiting to boot up. They last about 10 hours on a single charge, give or take. They are more conducive for things like reading ebooks. I'm a fan of books, and I use my iPad now primarily to read books. Mm-hmm. So, there's just so many advantages. Buying software or apps is so easy, drop dead simple. And you've got it all there to buy, 24/7 from an online store, right from the tablet itself, wirelessly. There's just so many advantages. It's not quite a computer replacement, but for most tasks, like surfing the web, reading your email, playing games, listening to music, watching video, it's a great device.
Now, have you crossed that threshold yet? Have you traveled only with an iPad? I assume you're using the iPad as your main tablet now.
Yeah, so the iPad 2 is still my favorite tablet.
Yeah.
In my line of work, I have, I think, about 24 tablets in my home office. I review a lot of them, but I keep going back to the iPad 2. That's a whole other discussion in and of itself, but I really think, it's not perfect, but they've really nailed it. And once you start, acquiring software for that tablet and accessories, like docking stations and, speaker systems that fit into that the iPad snaps into, it's hard to change, and that's where Apple, again, Steve Jobs didn't just, do great things with hardware, but the whole iTunes, the whole full circle solution, as they call it, was brilliant. Was that they were creating this whole ecosystem to support their products. It's hard to go back to something else. I love Android as a platform. That's Google's mobile operating system, of course. But, I really like the iPad too. So yes, to answer your question, I have traveled only with a tablet. If I have a lot of work on my plate, like I have to write, half a dozen articles a day for a few days, I'll probably bring my laptop as well. But let's just say I booted up a lot less than I turn on my tablet.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, Mark. And then I do want to talk about some of the different options on the tablet front and your take on where they're going, and especially relating to the news last week with HP stepping out of the tablet game. So we're going to take a quick break. We have Mark Saltzman on with us. You're listening to Dottotech.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dotto Tech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Remember, if you want any information about the stuff we cover on the show, or more importantly, if you're driving home, you're listening to the show, you're fascinated, as I know you should be, and you say, man, I got to hear the rest of this, well, just drop by our website. All of our shows are available streaming online and on demand at dottotech.com. Mark Saltzman is still online from Toronto. It's starting to slow down. I guess your kids are getting ready to go back to school, eh, Mark?
Yeah, Tuesday after the long weekend, kids are getting ready, and that's how it goes. Yeah,
yeah. Now, how old are your kids?
My twins are 9, so they're going into grade 4, and my little guy is 7, and Ethan is going to grade 2.
Now, I wonder if by the time they hit high school, if they will be a tablet will be like standard for them in school.
Yeah, you know, they predict that. I think initially at the post-secondary level, a lot of textbooks will be going digital, and whether it's on a dedicated ebook reader or a tablet that, of course, has a lot more functionality than just reading ebooks.
Well, of course, Amazon just had that great announcement about university textbooks all being
on. It's very exciting. And I think that's where it's going is digital textbooks. And I remember the days in the University of Toronto, you know, carrying around a backpack full of heavy textbooks. So, I know my kids are probably going to have a very different experience. I think it's going to trickle down. I think that high school and middle school, you know, junior high students are also going to see the value in tablets. Like we said before the break, Steve, I don't think it's a complete replacement for a computer. A computer has 10 times the memory. It has a physical keyboard, which is probably more comfortable and ergonomic for kids to type on for a long period of time. It's not as easy to get your content on and off a tablet as it is a laptop because most don't have USB ports or a memory card slot. So it's not a perfect both of them have their pros and cons, form factors.
Now, you said you had about 24 tablets in your home office, and I try and keep it to a minimum myself. And I feel kind of burned now because I spent a whole bunch of time playing with HP's tablet and learning WebOS and getting my head around that. And then they say, we're not going to make it anymore.
I don't think anybody expected that. Huh. I mean, the product was only in the Canadian marketplace a couple of weeks, and HP pulled the plug on its touchpad tablet. I gave it a decent review. The thing I did like the most was its platform, WebOS. I thought that the interface was very clever. That card view instead of static icons, seeing them as something that RIM Research in Motion borrowed heavily for their playbook tablet. I like the multitasking. I like the instant universal search. I mean, I really thought HP did a good job. Instead of just going with the free Android platform, the open source platform from Google, they spent the time and resources. You know, they bought Palm for $1.2 billion, and that came with WebOS. They tweaked it and made it optimized for a tablet. And then for what? They just discontinued it. I guess they reassessed the market. Apple has, 90-odd% market share, if not 98% from the last thing I read. So it's really hard to go up against the iPad. So they probably just thought, let's cut our losses. And they're even talking about selling off their PC division as well.
Yeah, that's another step. And that one is a little more understandable because that's a very slim margin business. Although it's profitable, that's been done before by a major manufacturer. IBM, of course, spun off the Lenovo division, and both companies are doing still very well, thank you.
Right.
So HP, I think, will see that whole PC division move into a new entity and still be around and still be competitive. So when you look at the strengths of the different platforms, because, you know, we do live in an iPad world, it seems, ourselves. What are the other options? I mean, when people walk into a store, do you think they should just go straight to the iPad and just not even look at the playbook or any of the Android tablets? Where are their strengths and competitive advantages?
Right. So I don't think you should just go and buy one without playing around with a few of them, whether it's at a friend's house or a colleague's desk or, you know, at the retail store itself. But, you know, I think that there are viable alternatives to the Apple iPad. My personal preference and professional preference is the iPad 2, but Samsung, for example, has a wonderful Android-powered tablet, the Galaxy Tab, the 10.1, which is a 10.1-inch tablet. It's thinner and lighter than the iPad, and it's fast, and it's Android, which is, again, Google's platform, has a lot of advantages. Steve, I know you're familiar with this. It's an open source platform, so it's free to develop for. So it's got a very vibrant community behind it of app developers. There is some exclusive Google applications built in because it is Google's apps. It is Google's mobile operating system. Multitasking is very easy on it, easier than the iPad. And finally, the browser, the web browser, can access more websites than you can on the iPad because there isn't a limitation with Flash.
Mm-hmm.
It's no secret Steve Jobs is not a fan of Adobe's plugin for animation and video and gaming. And as a result, when you're surfing the web on Safari, which is the built-in browser on the iPad, you can't access all websites that you want to. It hasn't happened to me a lot, frankly, over the past year and a half that I've been playing around with iPad and iPad 2. But for some, it's a real issue. So Android has some advantages over the iPad, and they've got an app store, Android Market, it's called, mm-hmm. with 250,000 applications. So there's certainly enough software out there for everyone, whatever your tastes and budget is.
Now, have you had a chance to do much research on the Amazon tablet, which is just on the horizon?
I haven't. So there's a lot of rumblings about it, that this could be the first true iPad killer. If it's priced aggressively below $300, they're saying. Some analysts are predicting under $300. That's $200 less than the iPad, so that certainly gives it a competitive advantage. Amazon has made a lot of investments in their digital marketplace, whether it's books or music or, you can imagine an iTunes-like Amazon around the corner. So certainly content is king, mm-hmm. as Apple has learned. So I think Amazon's in a great place, especially they have a very strong brand in the U.S., and they've done very well with their Kindle e-book reader. But there are other players. Sony is announcing today, the 31st of August, they announced their Sony Tablet S, which is their Android tablet that I've had a chance to play around with, a very nice tablet. Toshiba has a $400 tablet with USB and memory card slots. So for those who want to easily throw in a memory stick to double the memory or to easily get photos on or off the device, you can do that. So there's lots of options out there.
And well, what about the great Canadian offering, the Playbook?
First of all, it's a 7-inch tablet. So for those who want something smaller, it is more portable. You can slip it into, say, a suit pocket or into a purse. It is fast. It also has a dual-core processor for lots of speed. It's a beautiful screen. It's got dual cameras for video chatting and snap pictures and take video. I'm just not a fan of how they decided to handle email.
Mm.
I find it ironic that Research in Motion, a Canadian company that got its name through, push mail, the ability to get your email pushed to you whenever a new message arrives, the irony is that you can't pick up your mail on a Playbook unless you have a nearby BlackBerry.
It's almost like they made that feature out of fear that their BlackBerry handsets were going by the wayside.
Yeah, it's a good point. I haven't thought of it in that way. Certainly they say the decision was because of security. The bulk of RIM's business is still businesses who are, of course, concerned about security. And, without question, the Playbook and the BlackBerry smartphones are the most secure devices when it comes to, meeting all the different policies out there. I think RIM meets 400 and something odd policies. So to really protect your data. So the way that they explained it to me was, if you have a BlackBerry and a Playbook on you, let's say you're in the back of a taxi, your smartphone's in your pocket, but you're reading your email on the Playbook. If you forget the Playbook tablet in the taxi, once that connection is broken with your smartphone because you've walked away from it, there's no data that resides on the Playbook itself. Therefore, you're not putting your company's information at risk. Mm. There are ways around that. There are tablets that have passwords, and all tablets have a PIN, and there's ways of remotely wiping your data. But that's what RIM said to me. I don't really buy it, but that's their rationale. And plus, Jim Balsillie said about 4 months ago, we understand that this feature they call BlackBerry Bridge has had some negative press. So we have decided that within 60 days, we'll let you read your corporate mail on your device. But that was about 4 months ago. So
there we go.
Yeah, yeah. So, I should clarify. You can read your web mail on a Playbook. So there are apps right on the Playbook when you buy it. for Hotmail and Gmail and Yahoo Mail. But if you want to read your ISP, like, say, Bell or Rogers or TELUS, or your company's mail, you can't do that.
Yeah, that has to go through the BlackBerry bridge. Mark Saltzman. Yeah,
unless you have a nearby BlackBerry, that's correct.
Exactly. Mark, you can find his blog posts at sync.ca. He is, of course, a regular contributor to all of the movies at Cineplex Odeon. You can see Mark's face on the big screen at all the Cineplex theaters pre-movie. Always go in early, buy your popcorn, settle in, and spend a little bit of time with Mark Saltzman. I think that's a great idea.
Thanks, Steve. Great to chat with you.
It's nice talking to you, Mark. You have a good time.
You too, buddy. Cheers.
Bye now. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or a question for Dotto Tech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dotto Tech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
I'm welcoming into the studio now Theo Horsdahl, who is a buyer, computer buyer at London Drugs. And Theo, you've been playing with a product that's, I found, fairly compelling. It's called the LiveScribe. It's a pen with a twist.
Well, basically what it does is that, you know, everybody knows how to write intuitively. but what people don't have the ability to do is to find any of those written notes. I've got, you know, I have notebooks going back 10 or 11 years from business meetings and whatnot. But try to find something. Unless it's in an email these days, you can't search it. So this pen came about really to be able to search your own handwritten notes at a glance and amazingly find those notes in your own handwriting. Mm-hmm. So you do, if I write the word Microsoft, for example, it searches and it finds the word Microsoft in my own handwriting.
But it's a process. It's really a system that we have to get around. First of all, the pen is not a cheap pen. This isn't like your pen that you want to lose afterwards. They started around $100 for the pen.
That's right.
So it's not a super cheap pen. And they haven't put all of the money into the ink. It's not like into the cartridge. It's in the smarts. Now, you have to use special paper for it, correct? There's a gridded paper?
So it comes with a starter booklet of sorts. And it's a dot paper. And you actually can use the books they sell and which you provided, or you can actually print out your own on your laser printer as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, but what that pen does is it provides a reference for the pen, because it's actually kind of photographing or scanning in as you write.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah. And not only that, as it records your handwriting, you have controls on the bottom of the paper. You also have controls to record it, because not only does it do handwriting, it also records audio.
Yes.
A reference to your handwritten notes. So,
for
example,
if you're in a meeting, you can listen back to the meeting and see what you wrote at that point within the meeting, which is very familiar. And then at some point, it has to connect to your computer, right?
Right. Just a standard USB connection. And once you connected it, it triggers, much like any other device, triggers the LiveScribe desktop. And uploads automatically your notes or your session or whatever.
Into some sort of a notepad application.
Correct. It's called the LiveScribe desktop.
Okay. So, and then now, does that work from both Mac and PC?
Yep. Okay. It's simultaneous. And also, so that was the initial feature set. And since the introduction of the product, I think going back about 12 to 18 months now, it now does other things like share. So at some point, you want to share your notes with other people or colleagues. And they've termed the coined the term pen casting. So you can write your page of notes, diagrams, notes, whatever, and send it out, and anybody who has an Adobe Reader can read your notes. But it's evolved since then. So with the proliferation of mobile devices, you can now literally send your handwritten notes to anybody that has an iPhone or anybody that has a smartphone, an iPad, a tablet, whatever.
But it's not just a graphic note, because you're saying that it's also taken that and is it optical character recognition? It's converted into searchable text. That's a big key.
It does. It finds it using OCR, but because the basis of your notes are your own handwriting, it's really pointless to convert it to OCR if you want to search on your own handwriting. But having said that, on the higher end version of the product, there are OCR capabilities to it.
But regardless, you can search in you'll find the note with your handwriting. So if you've drawn little doodles or little pictures or written down a phone number next to it, you've got the ability to be able to find that information by looking at your notes.
That's
very slick. And what are the price points? There's a couple of different models, aren't there?
Well, there are. So they start at a 2 gigabyte capacity. And that starts at the $99. Now, they do—
That's the Echo SmartPen.
The Echo, the 2-gig SmartPen. And they provide you with a starter paper and a pen cap and just the basics to get you started. And the higher-end models, the 4 and the 8, add some functionality to it regarding that sharing,
mm-hmm.
but also give you a little more robust of a notebook, another pen cap, and the high-end model that we have has even the ability to 3D record audio in a room.
You say pen cap. What is a pen cap?
A cap to go on the end of your pen.
Oh, okay. Just the next one in case you lose
just
it.
Just the pen cap.
You don't want to lose the pen itself, but you can replace one cap. That's now, right. I'm looking at their site, and I see that they interface with Google Docs and mm-hmm. allow you to automatically send email, et cetera. But none of them are Wi-Fi, though, right? You'll have to plug them in to connect to the computer. And at that point there, it starts to interact with all of the other applications.
Yeah.
But I see an Evernote connection as well.
Yeah. So they just recently penned a deal, pardon the pun, with Evernote that allows you to share your handwriting to your Evernote account. So
that creates some really compelling possibilities because Evernote's one of my favorite applications. Mm. The ability to be able to, for the listeners who don't know, Evernote is a cross-platform application that stores all of your notes in the cloud on the internet. But it works on your iPhone, on your Android device, on your computer, and any note that you take, you can tag and is searchable and accessible from any device that you're on. And if now you're adding all of these extra notes to it, that's going to be very compelling. And it's interesting as we're seeing the world shift in how we use different technologies. I live on my iPad, but actually taking notes and writing on my iPad, it's a bit of a disappointment as far as that's concerned. I don't, because of the way that the touch screen works, when you rest your hand on it, it gets very awkward being able to actually take notes. And so I haven't found it a good handwriting note-taking tool. I'm using it for everything else. Mm-hmm. So I'm still carrying around a notebook. But now I'm thinking, wow, I can carry – I want to get one of these smart pens.
So this is the way to bridge your handwriting to those types of devices.
Yeah.
One of the other neat things about the product is that rather than just being a capture pen and paper, you now actually have the ability to control. So those actions that I mentioned about sending email or sending to Evernote is literally you can actually write your command on your notebook.
Yeah.
Tap it and it goes.
So you don't have to manage it. Once you started the connection to the computer, you can start all of those processes as you're taking your notes in. Send this to Evernote,
right. Send
this email to Steve, send this and copy it to me, and you can do all of that while you're in the note-taking phase when you're remembering it.
Exactly.
That is a very cool concept. I'm really intrigued. And we should – I know that you mentioned it, but go back to one last thing. It's got a microphone built in, so it's actually it'll record the audio of your meeting as well, which – will really add clarity. I imagine it'll cause the odd person to be hoisted upon their own petard. I never said that. Well, yes, you did, as a matter of fact.
Well, one of the nice things, too, is that it's relational to your handwriting. So you can literally tap your pen, if you're in playback mode, to any part of the page, and that's where it will go to that portion of the audio recording.
I'm pretty sure now in meetings, when somebody comes in with one of these pens, they should probably announce to the meeting that this meeting is going to be recorded for courtesy and for privacy so that people can opt out of talking. I don't want it to be recorded.
Well, I'm using one right now and I forgot to mention. No, I'm not recording.
You did. Teo Horsdahl is computer buyer with Leonard Douglas. If you want to try out the Echo Smart Pen, and I heartily encourage you to do it, you can drop by one of your local London drugs and have a look. I know I'm going to, you might have to lend me one. You might just have to do that, Dale. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And we do indeed have a giveaway that's going to be starting this week on the show. Art, we've got a LiveScribe Echo to give away, an 8-gigabyte version, I think they've given us.
Dottotech.com.
So you can go there, you can register to win your very own smart pen. It's not just a smart pen, it's a smart pen. It's probably the only pen you'll ever get that you should actually read the instruction book to.
Are you looking at me or are you talking to
people?
I'm
talking to everybody.
Things?
And I was pointing at you. I was being emphatic. That was a great show. Did you like the discussion of jobs? Because you're not really an Apple guy, Art. Did you find that interesting?
I've always said I can't afford to be an Apple guy, but you're telling me that I should be able to.
Here's the deal, Art. How many years are you going to own your computer
yes,
for?
Yes, I know. It makes sense. On a yearly basis, it's not that much money.
You got to come over to the light. Come to the light, Art.
Well, now that I've heard all this about Steve Jobs, I'm not sure if I want to love him, hate him, or have him adopt me.
I think I think the last is probably the least likely to happen. You can go for one of the first two.
Okay.
That is all the time we have for the show. My thanks to my guests who will be constantly shrouded in mystery. But they did a great job talking about the legacy of Steve Jobs, to Mark Saltzman as well, and to all our regulars. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week for more Dotto Tech. I'm Steve Dotto on behalf of Art Factora. Have a great week.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.